Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
Hey, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Katie, HRN Executive Director, and I'm so excited to share with you our coverage from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival.
We are here live today at Charleston Wine and Food.
Join us as we talk all things food.
Come to Charleston, eat some seafood. Eat all of the seafood.
Chicken fried chicken with chorizo steak and salsa verde mashed potatoes.
So quintessentially like Southern fare at its finest.
And have important conversations.
We're also talking about professional women in restaurants and how underrepresented they are. People of color in restaurants and how they're not talked about.
We get real with Food Network's Manit Chauhan.
Balance is BS. I was told that I wasn't going to be bleeped out.
And find out about raising sugarcane with Chef Sean Brock.
It's like being Indiana Jones or something. You never know what you're going to find.
You'll come away inspired by the power of food and the food scene in Charleston. Here's Dr. Jessica B. Harris.
Food is constantly in flux. Food is always moving. Food is the only real lingua franca that we have that allows us to connect with other folks.
So tune in to Heritage Radio Network on tour at heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't go wrong.
Hello, Internet Radio. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Amanda Dell.
And I'm Kimberly Chow. We're the co-hosts of Recommended Reading. We're also the co-directors of Food Book Fair, a series of events that celebrates writing about eating and all that there is in and around food media. We're really excited to be hosting the show where we bring on friends and family in and around food and media to talk about what they're reading, watching, and listening to. Later on, we'll be joined by Mac Malachowski, the handsome genius behind Mouthfeel Magazine, a pioneering gay food magazine that we love that has participated in Foodieoticals for many years and was just recently included in a story all about Foodieoticals, our favorite food periodicals, in the New York Times last week, in case you missed it.
So, Kim, what is on your nightstand, your Netflix queue?
Beyond just reading this one newspaper story and, like, folding it under my pillow every night.
Pray tell, what newspaper article are you talking about?
We were just in the New York Times, Amanda.
Ah, right, the New York Times. The Gray Lady.
In case y'all missed it, and we have been posting about it a lot because we're proud, but also mostly we're really proud of the amazing folks that this story is really about. There was a piece, the section front of the New York Times food and dining section last week by Tejal Rao about the independent food magazines of this generation and the stories folks are telling and why they're telling them and how they're telling them, including many of our friends that make magazines and participate in Foodieoticals and Food Book Fair, including Whetstone, Compound Butter, Cherry Bomb, Jari, Mouthfeel. Huh.
In case you missed it, Foodieoticals is our fair within the fair. It's an event that brings together all the editors and makers behind Foodieoticals, independent food magazines, and they all get to have a table, show their magazines, meet each other, and consumers and lovers of Foodieoticals get to meet those behind the magazine. So it's a really special event, and we look forward to having it grow more and more.
We just had it in LA for the very first time at Smorgasburg, Los Angeles, after our panels and talks at Ace Hotel downtown LA for Food Book Fair back in March. Hopefully we'll be announcing a New York date very, very soon. So stay tuned for that. Beyond obsessing over the independent food magazine scene, I've been watching Atlanta.
You know, I still can't get into this show, but I'm feeling inspired by your pick.
You gotta watch it. It's available on Hulu. It's also available on various streaming and torrenting sites, which I was never familiar with until I really decided I wanted to watch season two. And now my computer is filled with spam, and I was like reading recaps online about Van and Earn's relationship, and I'm so in my feelings about it because it's so toxic, but I want them to be together, but I know they shouldn't be. The writing is really good. The acting is really good. I highly recommend it.
You went deep, it sounds like.
I watched two seasons in less than a week, just so it's kind of like when you have a box of Pop-Tarts or cereal or something, or there's like the last cookie at so you got to like finish the box of Girl Scout cookies so you aren't tempted to eat more. So, but there's another episode dropping on Thursday and I can't wait. It's all about Darius.
You're such a binger. I'm a saver. I like to like savor the episodes and like I have them so I can look forward to something like, oh, tonight I'll watch this episode. I don't like watching so many in a row, but hey.
It's like I read books in the same way. I just need to know more about these people. I know they're not real people, they're fictional, but I'm so invested in them now. So, that's what I've been up to.
Great. Love a good television recommend from you.
Yeah. And I also am reading. It's National Poetry Month. So I've been reading There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyoncé by Morgan Parker, which we had the pleasure of going to her book talk at BAM last year, and just revisiting that because I saw someone posted about it online, and it's an amazing collection. She's coming out with a collection of nonfiction soon, so I'm getting ready for that.
So crazy. I actually picked that up from my shelf over the past couple days.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that on your list?
Yeah, it's always on my list. I wanted to, as you said, revisit it. So it's on my nightstand right now.
What else are you reading?
Oh, I'm just, before I get into that, I'm just trying to make spring happen here in New York. It's been pretty brutal. We had some April snow and we're having a cold rain shower today. So
sometimes it snows in April.
Yep. Well, we're just really hopefully getting some spring soon. So I was doing a little drinking over the past couple of days at my Passover Seder. And I also had the pleasure of going to Four Horsemen, a natural wine bar and restaurant in Williamsburg. And then I got inspired to pick a book off my shelf. It's called Natural Wine, An Introduction to Organic and Biodynamic Wines Made Naturally. And it's by Isabel Legeron. She is the founder of Raw Wine, a festival that travels from London to New York. I think they hit up the West Coast is Berlin.
Los Angeles.
You know, West Coast. And I just have become more interested in natural wine lately. Also, we had Jennifer on our show.
Jennifer Green from Glue Glue Magazine. Yes.
And I kept thinking about a lot of the things she said. And it's just, I want to know more, even though natural wine itself is really such a problematic term. And Isabel addresses it in this book. And I, you know from my past life that reading about wine is great and an important part of your education, but also tasting is important as well.
Are there natural wines for Passover? Is there kosher for Passover low intervention wines?
That's actually a great question. My Seder is pretty much as relaxed as you can get. So our wines definitely didn't have to be kosher for Passover.
I went to a surprise Seder on Friday where we read from the Huffington Post Haggadah.
I don't think I've seen that version before.
There were a lot of pictures in it.
Oh, that's cool.
I got to do the part about the plagues, though, which is my favorite.
I read the plagues. All 10?
Yes.
Oh, sweet. So anyway, this book is, you know, really, really informative. There's also a lot of great photos. It covers, you know, things such as what is the definition of natural wine, if there is one. history of quote-unquote natural wine, profiles of different winemakers, and an ever-important chapter on the orange wines, which I think are definitely having a moment. So I'm going to keep reading and keep drinking, hopefully not in that order.
Orange wine, a.k.a. skin contact, which I feel is like very mouthfeel humor to me, which is a good opportunity for us to bring on Mr. Malachowski, the creator of Mouthfeel Magazine. Hi, Mac. Welcome.
Mac.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Recommended Reading.
I couldn't be happier to be here.
Amazing. And congrats on your newest issue of Mouthfeel. It's in the wild. It's the Mexico City issue.
Yeah, it took a lot of work, so I'm really happy to see it come to fruition. But yeah, we made it happen, and it was a lot of moving parts, but it's out there. Yeah, you can buy it on our website and a couple of retailers we can talk about later, I guess.
Cool. We can't wait to dive into it. But first, what are you watching, reading, listening to?
Are you guys watching American Crime Story?
Wait, you mean the OJ?
Oh, no, the assassination of Johnny Versace.
Oh. No.
No, you can say no.
But my college classmate is Andrew Cunanan. I mean, plays Andrew Cunanan.
Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, what's his name?
Back up. Darren Criss.
He's
great
good.
Actor.
He's
great
a really
actor.
Good actor.
Go Blue.
And he, I love the show, actually. Well, I mean, I love it. I watched the whole thing. But there's just one part I just want to note for everyone is that in the fictional series, there's a lot of sort of embellishment around his story, although a lot of it's really true. I mean,
around Versace's story?
Actually, it's so funny because the story is about Andrew
Cunanan.
Yeah. And Versace and Penelope Cruz. As Donatello Versace is my Halloween costume, by the way. I'm calling it now.
Okay.
But there's also a part in it.
I won't go to the same party as you. I'll be Ricky Martin's character.
Oh, finally. Somebody. But there's a part in it where they send out these police sketches, and it's like a really bad composite of Andrew Cunanan in a bad wig. But it was in the 90s, so they must have done it in like MS Paint or something, because there's just like a red rectangle around his lips to like simulate lipstick. And I thought it was so crazy. I took a screenshot and I sent it to everybody. But then I watched a documentary because I was so fascinated with the whole story. And they show you the actual composite, and it's somehow worse. It's this like frumpy, like black wig. Anyway, you watch it, or at least watch one of the documentaries. But I think.
What are the documentaries that you are?
I think I watched they always have these names that are like The Man Who Killed Gianni Versace or something, you know? And they're like biographies on a PBS. Anyway, but they're just like ways for me to like continue to explore this story of this series that just seems like so absurd, but I love it. And I can't tell if it's like really good for gay culture, really bad for it, but either way, it's fun.
I love how there's like the American Crime Story version, and then there's like the documentary version. Like that happened with the OJ. It's like OJ, and then like the Ezra Edelman ESPN documentary. That's like,
I think they're all just capitalizing on the sensation. Well, they got me,
everybody.
You know. I mean, they're like,
right.
I want to know everything. Anyway, the next one's Tupac, so you can tell me.
But we seem to have similar heavy consumption habits, where it's just like looking for more.
Yeah. I mean, that one was funny because usually, you know, like yourself, I'll watch a series after it's been premiered. This one I had to like wait each week, you know, like what's going to happen.
Also, when I watch those crime shows, I think about what would happen if the crime occurred today, like in 2018.
Yeah.
Like we have so much, our like DNA forensic testing is just so much more sophisticated.
Oh,
there's
totally.
Cell phones. It would have been totally different.
Well, this one's interesting because they talk about how, you know, a lot of the first couple murders associated with this string of murders that ended in Gianni Versace's that, you know, a lot of people didn't even care because they were just kind of poor gay people. You know, the police like didn't think to investigate it, you know, or at least connect it to crimes of similar nature because they just were like, you know, it was the mid-90s, so people were like, or early 90s. I guess gay people were dying left and right, which is too bad. But and then otherwise, I loved, and I wanted to see if it's still up, is that David Hockney exhibition at the Met.
I think it just closed.
Oh, Shiza. It's really good. It was so good. There was this part at the end where he like, they released some like paintings he did like on an iPad, you know, he's still living in Palm Springs probably, but he you know, he did these great illustrations on an iPad. It was like this sort of like a band coming back together, you know. It's like the Rolling Stones are like in like wheelchairs and stuff, you know, but it's like, it was really cool to see like someone who's really really contemporary art. It's really nice. But
I didn't see that show.
Me either.
So good. Anyway, next time
David Bowie show.
I haven't. I have tickets, but I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I live across the street. I need
you're
to there. Go.
You're like peering through the window.
Like, what can I see from outside?
Yeah, you got like high powered binoculars. You could probably just view the show in your own
totally
time.
Save that $12.
Suggested donation.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to support Brooklyn Museum.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess the third thing I'm most anticipating is the next Sade night, ladies.
Okay.
When are we going dancing, man?
Second or third Thursday of every month.
Or it's got to be like every other month, because there's no way it's like, because there wasn't one this one. I think he's
No, there was one.
We
saw each other
there. Oh, there was one, yeah.
In March.
Was it in March already?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was like 3 weeks ago.
All right. That was before we went to Mexico, I guess. So
it sounds like it's... We're due for a Sade visit.
Yeah, we're due for another
one. Listeners that aren't privy, can you tell us what Sade night is?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a night that is sort of comedically confused as a night where Sade performs, which would be genius. She, like, plays, like, a dive bar in Williamsburg, you know? But it's actually just a night where John McSwain,
mm-hmm.
who's a DJ who does...
AKA Vacations,
right? He does this great mix of... 80s and 90s and 2000s music, including obviously a lot of Sade and a lot of Sade remixes and versions of songs you haven't heard before. And for somebody like me, and I think Miss Chow herself, who can't get enough Sade no matter what, you know. And so, like, this night in particular is comfortable and cozy and everybody's beautiful, and I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, the first time I went to it, I was really struck by how much it reminded me of going out when I was much, much younger.
Oh,
in New York.
Interesting.
Because I feel like ordinarily when you enter a social situation like a DJ'd party in New York, it's very specific. Like, this is a party for people in their 20s.
Right.
This is a party for people who like listening to, you know, 90s.
Like Euro disco,
radio,
yeah, right,
or,
yeah.
You know, and it seems like also the aesthetic is not very varied.
Mm.
But when I went to Sade night, it kind of also there was a little bit of glamour that I wasn't expecting, like the projection.
People
of,
that dress up like Sade.
Oh,
right,
totally.
The projection of the hologram setting the mood. But it all, this is the only way I can describe it that also spoke to me, is that it felt very innocent.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't super produced and branded and marketed and packaged.
Yeah.
It's just like, come whether you're 21 or 81.
Totally. And the music is amazing. So if you just go there and can have a drink, it's a little expensive, but that's New York. If you can have a drink and listen to, like, music for an hour, I mean, I can't think of a better, like, night out.
Yeah, I think I went with my backpack once.
Yeah, it's okay. They have Kocek there. They have Kocek. But cover's free. It's a great party. The tunes are great. Mm. There is also a vibrant community on John McSwain's Instagram page and Facebook, where there's a public group for Sade Night Lovers in New York, where there are a lot of comments, including people wondering if Sade is going to perform live. Every single month it comes up, which delights me.
I know, totally. Can you imagine? Ugh, I think she's due for a performance.
She's going to show up. Yeah, she just would show up.
Can you imagine?
Really crazy.
What do you think of her new song on the Wrinkle in Time soundtrack? Flower of the Universe?
Good. Yeah, I mean, she can do kind of no wrong to me, but... Yeah, I'd love a whole album. That's all. You know, like a soundtrack song, cool. Like I can milk it for a while, but you know, I need an album from her.
No. Sade, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Mac is waiting for a full
international singing sensation. Sade, if you're listening. It's funny. We always say, you know, especially with gay culture, we always joke that there's like, you're a type of gay. You're like a Madonna gay or a Britney gay or a, you know, what, Rihanna gay, Beyonce gay. But
oh,
we,
this
you know,
is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So we have long branded Mouthfeel's community as a Sade gay. It just sounds better. But
well,
also,
right.
I mean, she's sad and eloquent and alternative and, you know, does not subscribe to the mainstream. I mean, she's just kind of everything, you know, we want to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into all of what that is.
Uh-huh.
After we take a quick break.
All right.
So we're just going to... I don't know what I was going to say. I'm saying we are going to take a quick break and then we will be back with Mac Malachowski. He's the creator of Mouthfeel Magazine. It's a foodie article at the intersection of food and gay culture.
Perfect.
So we're going to take a break because this is a nonprofit radio station, Heritage Radio Network, home to our show and dozens more, all about food and beverage and all the things involved in that. And you can go to heritageradionetwork.com. Just kidding. It's heritageradionetwork.org because we're a nonprofit and we're a member-supported station. And we would love your love and support to keep all of us on air, to keep talking about good things like Sade and farm labor and school food. We'll talk to you in a little bit.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market. Whatever makes you whole.
Hey guys. Oh, we're back. This is Kimberly Chow.
And I'm Amanda Dell.
We are the co-hosts of Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, a show about what we're reading, watching, and listening to with awesome people in and around the food and media worlds.
Speaking of which, we are joined in the studio by Mac Malachowski. He is the creator of Mouthfeel Magazine, one of our favorite foodie articles. Welcome.
Thanks again.
And
happy to have you with us. Mac has in studio today, and it's also out available in the wild for fans and new fans, the new issue of Mouthfeel, issue number 4, which is the Mexico City issue.
Woo! Yay! Woo. Collective clapping is happening.
Just came out a couple weeks ago.
Mac is flipping through his own magazine and showing us some of the greatest hits in there.
Ooh,
and there's a full page spread, I see.
Lots of
spread,
full page
spread is the operative word.
Yes. So let's back up for a minute or two.
Yeah.
Quickly, how long has Mouthfeel been around and what planted the idea in your brain and how did you make it happen?
Mm. Well, we actually, starting at the inception, we premiered at Food Book Fair in 2015. It was a spring affair.
Okay.
And through Miss Thacker Jones. That, you know, I think leading up to the Food Book Fair, I wasn't expecting a lot because I just needed a hobby as kind of working in food and media, not really like finding a lot of interest in my day. So I thought, oh, we'll do like a little small project. So I thought, oh, we'll just do, we'll interview a couple food people who are gay and just get their sort of this sort of like, you know, gay perspective on their job. So this was Renato Polifido and Tyler Boring, who had been on Top Chef and had this like, that story ended up being kind of interesting because between his time on Top Chef and the time Mouthfeel came out, he had this like, you know, this sort of fall from grace and this like coming back. And it was kind of an interesting way to catch up with him after that. It was like a Bravo kind of recap almost, you know? And then we just threw in one third story, and then I was just going to go up to Food Book Fair and see who wanted to buy it for however much they thought it was worth. So it wasn't until I connected with a designer friend, Diego Moravia, who offered to really produce it with me, you know? And he was working for another agency at the time, an advertising agency, and they really helped push it along. So that was sort of our, you know, save a Kickstarter account. That was like our real like kind of kickstart into the world. So after Food Book Fair, I mean, we had such a great, you know, release. We sold tons of copies, and we realized that people wanted this kind of interesting alternative perspective on a food media magazine. So we just kept it pushing. We had an issue about the West Coast, followed by an issue about all about coffee, which one was really, really textured and really cool. And then this issue that we just came out with is all about Mexico City, and it was kind of an accident. I had gone to Mexico City to write some other issues and then realized how cool Mexico City. Can I swear on this, by the way?
Yeah, definitely. Feel free.
How fucking cool Mexico City was. It was so beautiful, and the food was amazing, and every person you met was just so creative and doing things on like a shoestring. And I mean a shoestring. You know what I mean? Like I say mouthfeel works on a shoestring, but these people, these artists and food people are just like making something out of nothing, which was, I thought was such an amazing spirit that I was really attracted to. So we met enough people and connected with enough people that we could fill up this magazine with with art and recipes and interesting photography. And so I'm really proud of it. So thanks for having me.
So glad.
Our pleasure.
To have a radio premiere of this.
I know, right? Yeah. Totally.
And I also love Mexico City.
Isn't it amazing?
It's amazing and inspiring and really generous of spirit.
Yeah, totally.
Can you tell us a little bit about the folks that you ended up working with?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to start with the cover because it's this amazing painting. There's this fine art painter named Fabian Charas, who should be just the most famous painter in the world, but she'll get there.
She's starting with mouthfeel.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I interchange her pronouns because she's like lives mostly as a drag queen and does this really great Airbnb experience where you can like join Fabian for this drag night where he like makes you over and takes you to the gay clubs and you get to skip the line, and it's really cool. So the article is a little bit about that, a little bit about painting, and then a lot about painting Mexican sort of like images of Mexican identity, including food. So the front cover is this really amazing original painting by Fabian of a man wearing a luchador mask, kind of like seductively licking a, I always forget if it's elote or esquite. Which one is which?
Elote is the whole ear. Yeah. And then esquite is just the
cut off.
Yeah. Which one is the most phallic? Which I think is elote. So he's really like, he's really going to town on this. And this is an amazing, huge painting that Fabian does by hand. And I mean, this and a number of other paintings are in here, too, that are explorations on Mexican identity and color and composition. And he's certainly the best painter I ever met in person, for sure. And I love painting. And otherwise, we have graffiti artists who were commissioned by Mexico City to paint the first government sanctioned like gay themed art in all of Mexico, you know, and they painted this amazing piece on this youth institute that's in there. We have El Diablo, who's a chef at an amazing boutique hotel in Mexico City, but he also produces the largest Mexican gay porn house in the world. It's called Mecos Films, and I mean these people are just like finding time to be cool, and then they all like go out till 4 a.m. every night anyway. You know, it's like these people are so cool down there and they just have such great taste. So that and much more in here. We have a photo essay by Christopher Sherman, who's also, you're going to hear his name a lot in the next year, where he just photographed escorts and people from the street. And just like it's a real nice snapshot of Mexican life, I think. So a lot in here to read.
Cool. So you it wasn't your original intention in one way or another to do an issue dedicated to Mexico City.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just didn't think I had enough contacts there to really like flush it out properly. But all it took was one, and it's my friend El Shimi, who's a curator at the Toy Museum.
Tell us a little bit about the Toy Museum?
I can, and you'll have to stop me because I won't shut up about it. It is so cool. It's I guess you'd call it. It's an alternative museum, although it functions exactly like a museum. You know, there's sort of static exhibitions that are there all the time. It's vintage toys, vintage paintings, you know, anything from Mexican or Latin American culture that would be considered sort of playful, you know, and they have this really great graffiti roof and graffiti outside. But kind of the most important part is that it's like a hub for kind of creativity. I mean, they have, that's how I found one of the artists who's in there, that's Artie and Chicle, these mural artists. The first time I saw one of their pieces was a huge piece inside the Toy Museum. And I was just staring at it forever. And I asked El Shimi who it was, and he introduced me to Artie and Chicle, who are this couple who exist in the graffiti world sort of against all odds. So it's just a real champion of original art, alternative art, and they have these rotating exhibitions. I think when I was there, they had this woman who collected like every Latin American Barbie for like 30 years or something. Wow. And they had all of them lined up. It was so major. It was so cool. So you have to go. If you're in Mexico City, that's like, you know, yeah, Anthropology Museum, free to call, of course, but hit the Toy Museum too.
It's been on every list of recommendations everyone has ever given me to Mexico City. And I've been to Mexico City a few times now, but I've never made it there, though I've really meant to, though I've told other people to go. And they always go, and they're like, oh my God, what is this place?
Oh, totally. Anyone who's listening, email me. I'll connect you with El Shimi, who's amazing. And he's so cool, too. He's this Japanese guy. His family came from Japan a long time ago, and he talks about the diaspora from Japan to Mexico. And there's a lot of Mexican people living in Mexico. It's amazing.
I also, a friend of mine runs a few restaurants in Mexico City, and his family is also Japanese.
Oh, amazing.
But also Japanese by way of California.
Oh, funny.
So that's a whole other story.
Totally.
But, yeah, really rich and
but in the intro, I talked about how place. I was, like, sort of, I was sort of, like, there was propaganda about Mexico growing up when I grew up in Nevada, and there was a lot of, I grew up around a lot of Mexican-American people, but I kind of never really knew how cool Mexico could be. You know, I mean, everyone would talk about Cancun. I watched MTV a lot. Juarez was very dangerous, obviously. So I don't know. There was something that never clicked with me until I finally went there a couple years ago. And I was just like, wait a minute, this is like a paradise, you know, or it can be. And I know they have a lot of problems, obviously. So, but yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think after New York, it's like my favorite city in the world, Mexico City. So. That's a bold statement, but
okay. You've traveled a lot.
Oh well, you know, travel, you know. Anyway,
did doing the Mexico City issue allow you to kind of like introduce your content or present it in a little bit of a different way? Like, you know, in some of your, you know, in some of the other previous issues, you may have had like certain type of columns or certain type of imagery presented in a particular way. Like, how were you inspired by Mexico City to maybe do something a little different with this issue?
That's a great question, because we were, you know, we want to, I think something that Mouthfeel is good at is like fully exploring whatever concept of the issue it is. You know, I mean, we don't work with like loose themes. I was about to be shady, but.
Shady's allowed and cursing.
You know, yeah, exactly. So, but we, you know, when we were doing the Mexico City issue, we wanted to do Mexico City. So we went there. And during the gathering process of these stories, we're also gathering imagery, too, because, as you know, we're, like, very very interested in design and presentation, obviously. So I scoured these vintage bookstores and found this amazing collection of vintage. It's a magazine called Paladar. Mm-hmm. And it was you know, it was like a gourmet or, you know, an old, yeah, it was a vintage cookie magazine, 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And I bought, I don't know, 50 of them or something. And so a lot of the design and the colors are inspired by those magazines, which is now defunct, but it was a Mexico City-based cooking magazine for a long time. And then the same with the pornography. You know, we like this intersection of vintage food photography and vintage pornography, and we found this amazing trove of Mexican gay porn via our good friends at UncleCricky.com. And Uncle Cricky, he's this very cool, eccentric guy who lives in San Francisco, and he does this... He is the gateway between vintage photography and vintage magazines into the 21st century. He's so cool. Anyway, his website's crazy, and you can buy original prints and vintage magazines of all kinds there. So also check that out.
Uncle Cricky.
Uncle Cricky.
What are the year parameters for vintage porn?
Good question. Because we...
Are there aesthetic markers?
I think it's an aesthetic marker. Okay. Yeah. I think at one point they got rid of mustaches. I think that was probably like 1987 or something.
Okay,
you know?
And so then anything after mustaches is...
But, I mean, you know, we are moving quickly, ladies. Okay, check the calendar, okay? It's 2018, and it's like, so something from 1992 is pretty old, you know? And it's very vintage, you know? Okay. And it can still feel very vintage. I mean...
So it's more about a look and feel as opposed to a year.
Yeah, exactly. So we just, you know when you see it, you know.
You know. Yeah, no, definitely.
You know, Del, come on.
How has the aesthetic of Mouthfeel changed over time? It seems like, as you said, you really give yourself over to the theme.
Mm-hmm.
Though you've also talked so... I love how in past interviews you've talked about how Mouthfeel originated and it came from this intersection of gay culture and food culture, but also from your growing up and being influenced by hardcore and punk. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, we... that was always the original aesthetic mission of Mouthfeel, to make it feel very alternative, you know, and part of that was we were, before Mouthfeel came out, I was only really modern, especially independent magazines had a very similar look and feel. And I think, I don't know what they're up to now, but we call it the kinfolk aesthetic, right?
I was going to say.
Yeah, it was a kinfolk thing, you know, and they were doing very like airy and very washed out, very beautiful photography. And we thought that was cool, but I thought there was room for something different, you know, and this, so the original designer and I were very influenced by this sort of world of punk and hardcore that we both grew up in Nevada and California, respectively. And, that's like the spirit of, you know, we call it fucked up and photocopied, you know, it's like, and we want to take that template and put it towards the magazine, but also put it towards video, but also put it towards physical culture, you know, like when we have events, we don't want, it can't just be this thing. It has to be like, the venue looks like it has to be Xerox or something, you know, like it has to just feel fucked up, or else it's like we're just doing the same thing over and over, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So with the newest issue, which was design directed by Ben Towsley, who's shamazing, he like dipped out of his regular world of designing David Byrne's new album and Fleet Foxes and Grizzly Bear for the last 10 years to do this magazine with me, because him and I have become good friends over the last year, and so that really shows in this too. It's definitely polished. It's a little more refined. The content is still very edgy. This one is pushing the limits of pornography. We're having a few conversations with the printer, so it's very salacious. But we still consider it art, and I think it's art, and I think sexuality is art, and I think this intersection of food and erotica is art too. So you will definitely notice a difference between the first couple issues in this one.
Excited to dive in.
Yeah, I think you'll like it.
I want to talk about some of your swag.
Oh.
And
what kind of swag?
Go on.
I have one of your t-shirts.
Uh-huh.
Which
you're
I
too
love.
Nice. Yeah.
With Julia.
Yeah.
On it.
The and Julia Child t-shirt, yeah. Limited yes. edition.
Yeah, we did yes. that just for Food Book Fair. And when they I were gone, that. They were gone. They went quick.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
And at times you've also specially packaged your magazines.
That's true.
And created other swag, like buttons and some like smaller postcards I think I saw. And mm-hmm. where do all of those ideas come from, and why, you know, you make a physical magazine that mm-hmm. people can pick up, and why is it important to build on that even more and give people something that they can really, you know, carry with them mm-hmm. or have them have on their jacket or...
Yeah, I mean, I have a joke that's like this Venn diagram of, you can't see it on the radio, but imagine a very large circle and it represents everyone in the world, and a really small circle that represents people who've heard of Mouthfeel. And then there's an even smaller circle that's people who have bought Mouthfeel, the magazine. And then the microscopic article, people who've read it cover to cover, which I don't even know if it includes my mom, but she does text me typos that she finds. So,
oh, yeah. That's a careful read.
Yeah. Oh, it's a read, sister.
Close reader.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She's reading me to filth. But, you know, and so we kind of saw that early on, and I realized that people are excited about the concept. You know, we get emails from people who are just like, ah, a gay food magazine that's like a little fucked up and like a little punky and like erotic, like that is me, right? So even if they don't need to know about the pink mole recipe that's in this issue, but there is one and it's good. You know, they want to like know, they want to be connected with the brand. So we do these, you know, yeah. We print black t-shirts usually with white on them, you know, it's just sort of our look and feel of our audience, I think. Posters, we print art that's produced, we're putting prints up. We're working with a photographer for this issue named David Graham, who we published some of the photos from his book called The Last Car. Mm. And this is amazing too, because this is about, his whole photo book is about how the last car in every metro, it's the myth of this, of every metro line in Mexico City is meant for men to cruise each other and have sex and meet each other and connect. So his photo book is a really neat exploration of sexuality and underground culture in Mexico City. So that's something we also saw on the website, you know, because it's certainly, if it's not exactly mouthfeel. It's connected to us through spirit. So
mouthfeel adjacent.
It's certainly mouthfeel adjacent, you know. So, yeah, I mean, we have a new t-shirt out, the Mexico City t-shirt.
Oh, snap. I gotta pick that up.
Yeah, pull that up. It's very cool. We have, you'll see it.
And that's on
mouthfeelmag.com.
Mouthfeelmag.com. Yeah,
exactly. Where else can people find you on social media, et cetera? Stockists, if they're looking for it.
We do most of our media production on Instagram, and that's at Mouthfeel Magazine. Can't miss it. We do a few tweets, mostly just asking, like, who's gay. You know, like, we just will tweet a questionnaire every once in a while. And then a lot of Facebook, you know, that's where we control all of our events. And we'll have an event in Pittsburgh on May 7th. We just had an event in Mexico City 2 weeks ago. And then catch you and everyone from San Francisco to New Orleans to Berlin over the next couple of months, I think. So you can find all that information on Facebook. And then we have, you know... Let's get real, ladies. We, you know, the stockist is hard. And this is funny because the New York Times article is really good. And what's his name? Moonsy?
Nick Muncy from Muncy. Toothache Magazine.
Okay, he should be like
distribution
our...
Distribution sucks.
Oh, yeah. He should
hashtag
be our,
distribution
from
sucks.
From Toothache. Nick, yeah, from Toothache.
He should be like our representor. Like, he should lead
in the Foodiaticals Union.
Oh, we should unionize, by the way, you know?
He's based on the West Coast, but as soon as he's here in New York, we'll talk to him
because that line he had in New York Times, about he said, distribution sucks, printing is expensive, and no one wants to advertise. And I was like, oh, damn, that was like what I was trying to tell Tejal for like an hour. But he like came through and they like blasted that quote near the end of the article. It was so cool. And it's totally true. I mean, distribution does suck. You know what I mean? I don't want to charge our stockists, you know, almost full price for this magazine. You know what I mean? They'll sell them and they do. And we have Arcastratus, who we love, in Greenpoint.
We love Paige.
We love Paige. She's so cool. Printed Matter in Manhattan. You know, each issue is different. We don't have regular stockists, so it's if you are a retailer, you're welcome to email us at info@mouthfeelmag.com, and we can talk. We finally set it up with our printer that he can start sending directly to retailers. So we have Now Serving LA,
great,
who I love.
They're the best.
They're so cool. Quentin in Mexico City, little coffee shop. Anywhere we can get our grubby little hands in, you know, because we want people to read it. We want people to know about it, but. You know, the content speaks for itself. We can't sell in Barnes & Noble like some other people.
Right.
So, you know.
Cool. Yeah. If you want it, it's out there.
Oh, if you want it, you can have it.
And you can buy direct at Mouthfeel Mag.
Which is, and that's where you get the special little gifts, the little pins, the little extra swags.
The extra swag. And just to wrap it up, as it's almost time to sort of connect the beginning of our conversation with the end, if you guys follow Mouthfeel on social media, you will also see all of the GIFs, GIFs, that Mac makes and other videos. I've always really loved the song choice when you make your videos. I just watched one of the promo ones for the Mexico City issue set to Fernando Abba.
Okay, this was
a delight.
If I could do one more plug, that was a that was an artistic choice by my favorite collaborator right now, which is Ernest, Mr. Ernest, MrErnest.com. He's a videographer. He's amazing. So him and I produced this series of videos, which you really should see because they're hysterical. And again, on a shoestring, you know, I think it cost us like one joint to make. And we had this great cast come in. Everybody got naked and we put food on everybody and filmed it and sent it to ABBA. And it was like kind of one of my favorite projects we've ever done. So if you're looking for a videographer, Mr. Ernest is your man. And if you're looking for to giggle a little bit, Mouthfeel Mag to watch these videos.
All the ABBA you can handle.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have one more quick question for you.
Yeah.
Burning in my brain. Mm-hmm. Something that we talk about a lot at Food Book Fair is community and how do you build that? Mm. And you touched on your Mouthfeel Live events a little bit a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I've had the pleasure of attending a coffee grinder here
in New
York.
The best event names we can think of.
So it was surrounding your coffee issue. I could barely get through the door.
Oh, that's so cool.
No, really. I really
Well, because we had Shake Shack.
True. Shake Shack gave away some burgers, and that might have had something to do with it, but I don't really
think... Who we love, by the way. They're amazing, but...
I don't really think... I think that was a great add-on, but how did you manage to cultivate such an active community that will show up?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, I mean, this is New York. If you tell people there's free booze, they'll probably come. But, you know, but that one, we made a lot of sales, too. I mean, we had people coming and buying the magazine and buying the t-shirt and wanting to connect with the creators. And, you know, we don't want it to be super, you know, fluffy and pretentious. I mean, we're not like these people that people come to meet or something. But I think people like the type of people they're going to see there, you know, because they're not going to be, not everyone's going to be super polished, you know. There's going to be somebody like half drag, you know, like coming home from a night out or something, you know. So it's going to be like the type of people you see there. And we have great friends in really creative fields. Michael Cyril Crichton, he's like one of my favorite actors. He always comes. Murray Bartlett comes. You know, people in bands and people with face tattoos. And, you know, I mean, I think it's cool. I think that's what we want. These are our muses, these people who are supporters of the magazine that, like, live these, like, genuinely alternative lives. So that's, I think that's what people expect when they come through. And I think that makes everybody comfortable.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're so glad you continually connect with each other and that you hold space with these live events and also online and in your print pages.
Well, you're too nice.
And in this shipping container at Roberta's.
Yeah, I know. It's so cool.
Broadcasting.
Here. I love being on I love being on the radio with you guys. It's so
I love
fun.
It too.
Amazing. You're signed up to guest host one time.
Oh, that'd be rad.
That would be awesome. If you guys listening out there have any other suggestions for what we should talk about when Matt guest hosts or who he should bring on, don't forget, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us at heritageradionetwork.org. And you can also review us on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else you pod. So please do that. Tell us your feedback, and we hope to hear from you.
Yeah, and just remember, Heritage Radio Network, it's a member-supported nonprofit, so we need your support to keep our show and all the other ones on the air. So head over to heritageradionetwork.org, click on that beating heart, become a member, and that's all you need to do.
We will talk to you guys next week. Thanks so much, Mac.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody get this new issue. It's hot.
Caliente.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Recommended reading is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.